Guaranteed not to be confused online by fan fiction. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. I mean, who does that on the internet anyway? Welcome to the Ask Us Anything edition of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us in the middle of this very busy off-season. Can you tell? This is an interesting episode because this is the last real, like, gap week we've got here on M101 because we have IndyCar back this weekend at Long Beach. Talk a little bit about that shortly. But this is also the edition where our Riverside viewers, the people that are on our Discord server, can ask us anything over the next hour or so. If you've got any interesting questions they can send our way, then we'll answer them. They can be on just about anything because I've got me and RJ O'Connell joining me on this occasion. RJ, how's it going?
For some people, it's been, you know, an easy breezy month off with no sort of content to kind of fill the gap. But, you know, that ain't me, pal. Super Formula season started, Super GT season started, and I'm actually part of Racer's coverage for that since now. Racer Network and Racer Plus picked up the U.S. and Canadian distribution rights, which is awesome. Now it's time to get the other 200 countries outside of Japan on World on board for the remaining six races. Not seven, because Sepang got called off due to the ripple effect of these uncertain times. Registered trademark.
Yes, sadly, I think the a lot of cost about the shipping and the freight and the confusion regarding that is probably just a bit too close now to
Malaysian employees being asked to work from home to ration fuel because fuel was expensive. Any particular reason why, Dre?
Semi-major global conflict in the Middle East. Does that about do it? Yeah.
They say I'm getting tired of all this winning, Dre, and I really wish it stopped. Speaking of winning, Cam Buckley is not here. He has suffered a ruptured HVAC and will be back in action. He's being evaluated week to week.
Yeah, it's also his dad's birthday. So happy birthday to the big fella. I promised I'd give him the week off on this occasion because it was his dad's birthday. So happy birthday, Mr. Buckley. I hope you're enjoying the show. Just us two on this occasion. But, I'll get the general housekeeping out of the way and then we can get into the real nitty-gritty of things here because we can go off of that afterwards. But just in case you're new here, here's the places you can find us. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you want to follow us personally on Blue Sky, you can. Dre Harrison and RJ O'Connell are literal names. bsky.social. If you want some video highlights of the podcast, you can find them on our Instagram page, motorsport101pod, and our TikTok account, M101_podcast. You can get all those details and a boatload more on our website, motorsport101.com, including the blog section, where we've got full reviews of up-to-date, just about everything we've had so far this year. Obviously, a bit of a writing break was the lack of action, unfortunately, but these things happen. But if you really, really like us, of course, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of these shows. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Raptor is, as Jason is, as Krista Hardy's doing right now. I see Vic in there as well. We opened the chat up to our entire Discord server just for this occasion. Hopefully we'll get some questions coming in the meantime soon. But that's just about it for the general housekeeping.
Little bit of things to talk about, and we're not going to talk about the race car internet discourse du jour unless somebody asks us about it, in which case you were sick in the head. But what we do have is a bit of MotoGP silly season news, right?
Yeah, big one. This was one that dropped roughly last weekend, and Yuri Pudjemon, who continues to be the dude for breaking MotoGP stories this year. He's on fire this season. Broke this one over at MS over the weekend in a genuine Agoura surprise, and I don't say that very often. It looks like he's not staying with Trackhouse next year, as Ayagura is heading back to Japan, only this time as a factory Yamaha rider.
I gotta say, I appreciate the commitment of Hateration here. Ayagura lost so much faith in Honda and its program and its prospects in moving up with them that he dipped on them in Moto2, went up to MotoGP with Aprilia, and when the time came to switch houses, he's just like, you know what? I'm going to join Yamaha.
Yeah, just... Honestly, this is a genuine shock. I did not for the life of me see this one coming. I thought Trackhouse was probably just going to keep its riders as it was. Like, Fernandez has had a bit of a sketchy start, but, like, overall, I don't think he's... I don't think there was a major reason for Justin Marks and Davide Brivio to move on from either one of their riders. Agüero's been fantastic so far this season.
Yeah.
He's been pretty much top six worthy all year so far. And Raul Fernandez, even as the weakest of the four Aprilias, has still been in the top 10 most of the year so far. So didn't think there'd be a big reason to move on from either party. So for Agüero to say, I'm going to Yamaha, is... Whew, that's a lot. And
it's an interesting lineup on paper of Jorge Martin and Ayagura, if all this shakes out as we plan. And then you just wonder, what is the bike going to be like? And is this going to be any better than Fabio Quartararo and Alex Rins, which are giving up?
It's an interesting trade-off, because I think there's a big pro and a big con to this, because Yamaha all of a sudden has quite a nice-looking lineup. I mean, Jorge Martin has every chance of doing a CM Punk in Chicago and taking the title with him to another manufacturer. He's got every shot to do with an Aprilia.
Again.
It would be the second time in 3 years. Like, there's every chance that Martin could win the title on the Aprilia this year and then take the number one plate to Yamaha. That would be hilarious. I've not had the number one plate since Jorge Lorenzo in 2016. Which would be wild as it is. You've got him, already a MotoGP world champion. We know of Martin's quality when he's healthy and on it, and he's had a very good start to this season so far. Looks like a title contender again. Then you've got Ayagura, who's been fantastic all year long. He's been pretty much top six all year. You've got Toprak with Pramac, who has adapted to MotoGP life better than expected so far. It was best of the Yamahas at COTA. Who's also going to have that Pirelli tire knowledge coming into next season from World Superbikes. And then rumors have it Ezan Guevara could be moving up with for Pramac in the second seat to potentially replace Jack Miller. And for those who don't know, Ezan Guevara is second in Moto2 right now. So you potentially could have MotoGP, maybe two-time MotoGP world champion, Moto2 world champion, three-time world superbike champion, and maybe the greatest ever on a superbike, and maybe another Moto2 world champion alongside him. That would be quite the fleet of riders all of a sudden, especially given they're the worst manufacturer in the sport right now on paper, which is kind of wild.
Yeah. It's the thing, right? You certainly hope that the upturn is there. You've practically cleaned house with all but Toprak if all those predictions come true. And, of course, there's many rookies who want to move up from Moto2 to MotoGP. What happens to them? Do they get the call-ups that they wish for? What happens? The number of veterans who are going to be out of contract, potentially looking for new rides or to try and stay in the sport. All of that is going to be fascinating, as Jason points out correctly. I remember when Ezan Guevara was a hyped up Moto3 rookie. That was going to be his year. And then Pedro Acosta won from pit lane in Qatar. And we all know what happened there.
Well, Ethan Guevara won the Moto3 title, then Acosta came over and then basically won from pit lane on debut. And we all just kind of forgot about Guevara, who, to be fair, had a bit of an agoura himself, and he mangled his wrist going into his first Moto2 season. And we thought, is he ever going to look, is he going to be more like an Acosta? Is he going to be more like a Lorenzo Dalla Porta? Someone who moves up, but then just doesn't do anything in Moto2. We've seen that many a time with Moto3 and lightweight class champions that go into the intermediate class and they just never really kick on. Dalla Porta was one, you know, there's many out there over the years. That Sandro Cortese was another one of guys who was, you looked promising in lightweights, but just never really hit their full potential in that class. I joked before that Moto2 was the class where talent would go to die, because it's just such a competitive league when it comes to just raw talent. So it's hard to evaluate. But in this third seat, I mean, it was, to be fair, it was more like the end of last year where Guevara was starting to look more like the guy that we thought he could be, and he's kept that going into this season so far as well, with a couple of podium finishes to start this year. If that's their full lineup, that's a very strong lineup. It's way better than Yamaha would really have any credit being in that sense, because damn.
This ain't the Yamaha of old.
So, and then that poses a couple of other questions. Mm-hmm. What does Trackhouse now do? Because
it's interesting,
I've been there,
right?
Expecting this.
Yeah. Well, one of them was going to move on. I think if you want to keep Fernandez, that's fine. Trackhouse has been the rumored landing spot for 2020 world champion Yoann Mir, because it's looking like it's inevitable that he's going to be moved out of Honda. I'm not going to rehash anything that my New England colleague would be ranting and raving about already, but I would think it would be very, very funny if he goes through all of this and Yoann Mir magically comes to Aprilia and completely rights the ship. That would be so funny. But another name has entered the discussion, one that is linked to an Italian motorcycle manufacturer, but not the one you might be thinking of.
Yeah, the prevailing rumor coming out of the clubhouse is not Yoann Mir, because that was the kind of the obvious name drop from the Davide Brivio Association from when he won a world title with Suzuki back in 2020. No, it's Nicolò Buniga. The
who right now is putting belt to ass in World Superbikes. Now that Top Rack is left, if you have an over-under on the number of wins Nicolò Buniga is going to get with Ducati and World Superbikes, take the over. He's been that good. And
yeah.
As you mentioned with Top Rack, Pirelli experience.
He is 6-for-6 in World Superbike so far this year. Average winning margin, 4.2 seconds. And the second most dominant start on points scored to a World Superbike season ever. Only Carl Fogarty in 1995 had a bigger lead after the first six races of a World Superbike season. And he went 140 out of 150 to start that season with four wins and 2 second places. That's how dominant Nicolò Buniga has been so far this season. Yes, it's been kind of predictable. We kind of reckoned that Buniga would do this. Now Toprak's not in World Superbikes, but it's seeing is believing. And as RJ Cartwrighty alluded to, Pirelli tire experience, that's going to be valuable. Did a couple of rounds with the factory Ducati team last season to fill in for Marquez's injury. Looked quick, was in the points both weekends. I don't necessarily say super competitive, but certainly for a now test rider that's come in to basically do the Michele Pirro role now that he's 142 years old. It looks like Ducati are not going to take that option because all their seats are now looking like they're pretty much full. We talked about it last time out that factory team is going to be Acosta and Mark. Cassini's going to be Bastianini and Danny Holgado coming up from Aspar in Moto2. And it's, we now get in the confirmation. We've got confirmation after Austin that Uccio said Fabio DiGiantonio will be getting a contract extension imminently alongside Fermin Aldeguer, who will be moving from Gresini over to VR46. So
yep.
It looks like all the Ducatis are full. It looks like all the Yamahas are full. So I think it was Buliger's manager, Alberto Morbidelli, who basically said, if Ducati, it takes two to, if, I think the Italian way said it was, it takes two to make a marriage, which was a very Italian way of describing things. So basically, if Ducati's not going to take that option, Buliger is more than welcome to talk to people elsewhere, basically. It just depends. Does Davide Brivio want to take a punt on a World Superbike rider or not?
Yeah. Well, we've seen proof of concept that it can work, even in these days where production bikes and MotoGP prototypes are so divergent from one another. Not like it was back in the Bayless and Fogarty days and the Edwards days, et cetera, et cetera. But Toprak is showing that it can work. Buliger, I think, can work despite, you know, the reduced competition that he is currently beating up on. But we have seen him in MotoGP before with the factory team. I think if you give him a full offseason to prepare and train for such a moment, I think it could work out. Other bit of news here, minor news.
One more thing. Sorry, I cut you. Prevailing rumors persist that it looks like Tech 3 is switching to Hondas.
Oh, well, that is interesting.
That might be the way that Johan Mir and Luca Marini stays on the grid. Because it's looking like it's like Gunther Steiner's apparently having a change of heart about this. Because when he first got in, he said first call would be to stay with KTM. But it's looking like the prevailing talk is that Tech 3 are switching to Hondas. And if they're switching to Hondas, why not just take the current factory lineup?
Yeah, it's not like the factory team needs them right now. You know, we thought maybe if they were going to keep one, based on current form, you keep the consistency of Luke and Marini. And, well, now it looks like they're going to keep neither at the factory team.
Yeah, because as we mentioned last week, it's looking like Fabio Quartararo and David Alonso are going to be the factory Honda riders for next year. Big pressure move for David Alonso going straight in from a year and change of Moto2 into the factory Honda team, where the man who beat him to a championship last year is on an LCR. Funny how these things turn out.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting things, but hey, he was getting Motorsport 101 Rider of the Year votes when he was down in Moto3. I think he should have gotten votes. I agree that he should have won it. But if you get votes at that level, it means you're doing something right. It means that your trajectory is only going to go up. So that having him jump straight to the Honda factory team for a prospect of that pedigree, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it also neatly ties into a question we got from Raptor in the chat saying, KTM, second rider alongside Alex, who? Well, yeah, we think Alex Marquez is going from the Gresini team to the KTM factory team because Alex Marquez has made it very clear he wants that factory paycheck. He's 30 years old. He's in the second half of his career now. He wants to get paid, which is understandable. It's a good question because initially Maverick Vinales was favorite for this because he was riding very well the first half of last season. Brad Binder's been a bit disappointing for some time now in MotoGP. Hasn't had a podium finish of any kind since the first round in 2024. So it's now been over 2 years since Brad Binder's last podium finish. I do wonder, though, because Maverick's had that horrible shoulder injury he had in the middle of last season. He's never looked like the same rider since then. We've now found out that he crashed at the Sepang test in preseason. That basically broke one of the screws in the plate that he had that was causing him more and more discomfort. So he's had to have that operated on in this 5 week or 4 week in MotoGP's cases break. Now apparently KTM's not so sure about giving Maverick that promotion. So it's like KTM's got a bunch of damaged goods right now, and they're not quite sure which one's going to be the partner for Alex Marquez, given we know Acosta's going to move. I don't know what the answer is there. I think you stick with Brad, but Brad's not been the guy that he was in previous years, and that is a concern. Also, Pit Bearer has made offers. Apparently, he did make offers to Morgado and David Alonso, the Aspar Moto2 riders, but it looks like they've both been rejected. So, RJ, I've got a crazy idea.
Yeah.
A certain someone on Discord server is going to kill me for saying this. Barry Baltus?
Barry Baltus of KTM. The Belgian rider who has been up there, reasonably competitive in Moto2, yet to really take that step into title contention from what I've seen. But, you know, the talent and the potential is there. And I mean, it's KTM in a depreciated state where we don't even know if it's going to be KTM soon. It could be CF Moto. It could be any number of things. It could even be KTM.
Yeah, Vic in the chat says Manuel Gonzalez. In theory, you'd be right. Manuel Gonzalez is probably the best Moto2 rider on the grid right now on just sheer outright ability. But we've mentioned it before on this show. If you've got a Spanish passport, you better be spectacular because you're not special in the eyes of the promoters. And Manu Gonzalez, for all his talent, is not spectacular. He's not what Pedro Acosta was as the last Spaniard to move into the top flight and look good, which is a problem. It's not fair for Manu Gonzalez, who should be a MotoGP rider right now, quite frankly. He's already had the test with Trackhouse last year, and apparently he impressed some people. But I'm sorry, buddy, you're Spanish, which is a weird thing to say.
23, it's his sixth year in Moto2. I mean, you've had older guys with much more tire on the tread on the tire. I know the analogy come up in recent years, but if Alonso is there and Holgado's there and Guevara is there, I understand why you'd pass on him. See also Valsecchi, Davide, Limer, Fabio, Drugovich, Felipe, Bornaroli, Leonardo, except that was different circumstances. Yeah, that's tough for him.
It's giving big Marcel Schrotter energy. It's like Marcel Schrotter plus, because at least Gonzalez can win races, something that Schrotter never did, but generally speaking, if you're a six-year veteran of Moto2, then chances are you've probably been around too long to truly impress people. The last big season guy I can remember that came up like that was Alex Marquez. He did 5 years in Moto2. And let's be frank, I think a big part of the reason...
Yeah, but his big brother.
Like, let's be frank. If his surname wasn't Marquez, he probably doesn't get a top-end gig right away. Of course, the timing of Jorge Lorenzo's imminent retirement helped, of course. But, you know, it's Gonzalez screams gatekeeper more than premium talent. And that's his problem in that sense. And
he does again, not scream to a loss. No, it it's not fair. Nothing is. Also, IndyCar is going to its new facets, one-lap shootout format at all the street races, starting at Long Beach for the rest of the season. This is one of the changes of all time, and I'll get to see it when I'm there this weekend. That's all I got to say about it.
Well, I'm going to be honest. I was never a big fan of one-shot qualifying when it was in F1. I thought it was kind of boring when we had it. I was like, let's be frank, the first 13 or 14 runs probably didn't matter in the grand scheme of things, because you knew what you were here for. You were here for Raikkonen, Alonso, Montoya, Michael, to get those late runs in at the end of the session, and seeing just one car on the track do one, I think is a bit... I don't think it's great for TV, per se. But as a catch-up from what we saw in Arlington, things need to change if this is going to work. I think the two main things you need is sector splits. Like, your GPS is not reliable. Arlington proved it. Just have conventional timing splits like every other motorsport series on Earth does. Like, that would be one thing. The second thing would be, do we really need a commercial break in the middle of the session? Because I don't think your fast six round should take 20 minutes. I know 6 minutes was a bit short for the original package. Going all the way the other way and going to be like, oh, yeah, it's going to take us like 20 minutes to get all six of these one lap runs in, I just thought didn't come off well on TV, if that makes sense. So, like,
the good news is Long Beach will be it'll be a shorter lap in Long Beach. At least that'll be the one material change. Who knows what that's going to impact? Who knows who, if going out early or going out late is going to be a disadvantage or disadvantage or not? I don't know, man.
Indeed. I mean, it's something. A part of me is like praising IndyCar for having the versatility to try something genuinely different with itself. But at the same time, I've never been a big fan of mid-season rule changes either. When it's not the first time IndyCar's done that. So I'm kind of like, I'm a bit hesitant about this one, but I think it'll be fine. It's not a format problem. It's an IndyCar production problem. I think that is the bigger issue here, as opposed to the format itself. So I think we'll see. I mean, you're there more for the IMSA than the IndyCar. Let's be frank here, RJ.
That qualifying session is going to go by in a breeze because we don't have all the classes, and it's 15 minutes a session with no knockouts, no matter what.
So is it just the hypercar and GT3s?
Yes, but it's specifically the GTD class, which is the one that they always say is pro-am, even though the quote-unquote ams are just like, you know, those true amateurs, like Rubens Barrichello's son, who has professional aspirations.
Right.
Because we still live in a society where people consider silvers to be flat-rate amateurs no matter what, but I don't want to get on that high horse for too long. Otherwise, I'll burn myself out before the start of the weekend.
It's a bit like having an NBA celebrity game and having that point guard look suspiciously like Steph Curry. It's like, hang on a minute.
Speaking of celebrity games, it came back on social media that we need to bring back the pro celebrity race at Long Beach. I love the idea. It's just tricky now that Toyota's not the main sponsor because Acura and Honda don't really have a one-make series in the United States, like Toyota does now with GR Cup North America. But it's interesting. GR Cup North America was also at a street track earlier this year. They were at Arlington. Now, I'm not saying if you want to provide the pro celebrity race, you do it in Arlington. But I'm saying it'd make more logistical sense. It just wouldn't be at Long Beach in front of all the Hollywood talent.
And the chat is screaming MX5s at Long Beach.
Oh, dude. Oh, if Mazda could get a Miata version of the Pro Celebrity Race going, I think that'd be great. Before we jump to questions.
The big news coming out of that really as well for you guys is Porsche's been slapped with a 45 kilo BOP adjustment.
Uh-oh. Dre, I think the kids found the bloody pink Cadillac in the parking lot. I think Frankie's body is going to take a couple days to thaw out so they can do the autopsy. I think Tommy DeVito isn't really going to be a made man. I talked about this in Sebring. This was inspired by one of the racer mailbags where Marshall Pruitt was laying out just like, Porsche's doing what it can, but the brazenness of which it's flexing its pace advantage over the rest of the field reminds me of Ryan Tim and me of the bit in Goodfellas where they pull off the Lufthansa heist and then they decide, right, what's the best way to lay low so that way the feds don't catch us? I don't know. Let's buy fancy cars and clothes and tip off the feds. That'll make us keep a real low profile.
Yeah. I'm sure no one will notice.
It's the old spec Porsche running in the hands of JDC Miller that's immune to all of this. At least their drivers aren't like, oh, they just got Lauren Heinrich to pick up some more races for added hypercar experience. Oh. We could still get a Porsche win at Long Beach. It's not impossible.
If they qualify on pole, who gets past them? Like that could be the real problem here. It's just like, because Porsche is so good at its tyres, as Cameron Buckley has taught me well over the years.
Yeah.
The only way you can kill that is by putting an F load of weight on it. And, well, 100 pounds will do that to a motherfucker.
Yeah. It's also taking away all the stage one power, putting it about minimum at a place where there's not a lot of high speed circuits. Now, Jonathan Duguid has told me and told the press that, like, it's not going to change how they attack the weekend, but they are going to have to get creative to find ways to get results out of this weekend because this could be tough for them. On that in a future episode. Also, did we talk about Giampiero Lambiase going to McLaren before we get in the questions?
We didn't know. That's actually something that's actually probably worth talking about, actually, yeah. Because I forgot about that one in F1, but yeah. Earlier this week, late last week, I should say, really, it was shock announcement out of nowhere that Giampiero Lambiase, for those who don't know, Max Verstappen's race engineer and Red Bull's overall head of racing, third in command at Red Bull Racing, is leaving at the end of his contract and joining McLaren no later than 2028 is the official word, and they may have to negotiate some gardening leave here and there. As such is the way in Formula One. But yeah, that's a startling story. It's another major departure coming out of Red Bull Racing. And they've been a remarkably resilient team over the last decade. Mm-hmm. But at what point does one departure become one too many? Because they've lost so many quality people in the last 2 or 3 years. It's insane.
And I've already seen the hot takes about how, well, it only took Ferrari failure Laurent Mekies just a handful of months to screw up Red Bull. I don't know about that.
Look, I think a part of this is, we go back to the days of 2023 on here when Red Bull won, 21 out of 22 races that year. What was the one thing we praised about them beyond Verstappen's outright brilliance? It was also how well they were run operationally, and no surprise, a lot of those guys have been offered better jobs elsewhere. Jonathan Wheatley got a chance to run Audi, and, well, he did briefly. Dan Fallows got a chance to run Aston Martin from a technical standpoint, so of course he went. Rob Marshall went to be, basically head of tech over at McLaren alongside Peter Prodromu, who was already an ex-Red Bull guy himself. There's countless others. Craig Skinner's now gone. Obviously, the big ones, Horner and Marco, are no more. It's the sign you're a good team and people are poaching you. But at the same time, how many is too many? And if you're McLaren, I do wonder, is this them trying to get Max out right? Because you've now got 3 members of his inner circle in that team. And I read the press release when this was announced, and Zak Brown mentioned Rob Marshall and Will Courtenay, who's their head of strategy, directly by name, and I don't think that was a coincidence.
Well, it's already started to spin up the rumor mills like Verstappen is going to leave Red Bull. Now you just add another party into that other than Mercedes.
I'm not going to lie. I was asked to spin up a video for Crash that's on their YouTube channel, the F1 channel, right now. And
check out.
My theory on that was, what if Max takes a 1-year sabbatical, go drives for McLaren Hypercar, he gets to do his Le Mans race that he's always wanted to do. He's talked about that before. He gets his Le Mans run, and then if he likes the ideas that F1 puts forward to change the sport in the medium term, McLaren can just drop him in one of their F1 cars. There's a thought.
So you're telling me that to get Max Verstappen to the McLaren Formula One team, he would take a gap year in the hypercar program?
Look, this is the nearest I will ever get to a hot take, because I don't normally deal in that market. But
yeah,
I've heard crazier ideas. Like one from Raptor in the chat, maybe RJ could answer. Would that affect Max's relationship with Mercedes and his GT3 team?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, ultimately, every GT3 manufacturer wanted Max Verstappen to drive for them. The program started with Ferrari. It's now Mercedes-AMG. It seems like that's pretty self-sufficient. And if I'm Max Verstappen, I'm calling the shots on the GT3 program. I have the choice between Mercedes-AMG, who have a proven program that has won endurance races the world over, won championships the world over. And then you've got McLaren, which has won endurance races, just shorter ones like Bathurst, because they don't have the best track record in 24-hour races. I know they're both getting new platforms soon, but based on current evidence, I'd still stick with Mercedes-AMG. And I don't think that would change too much unless McLaren takes different power units. And they're not going to be competitors in the hypercar sector anyway, because unfortunately, it looks like Mercedes-AMG is not close to a hypercar debut, though we know McLaren is imminently close, which is they used to tease us all the time. This now feels like ancient history now that it's going to happen, but it's true. McLaren coming to hypercar was the biggest running joke within our circles.
It was, and not to mention Mercedes would never enter hypercar because Toto Wolff has always said fundamentally he's supposed to be OP. So he said if we're going to have BOP, he thinks that's just fundamentally not motorsport. So, you know, debate that one amongst the sports car crowd at home. That's not my fight, and it's not my circus.
Well, ultimately, every manufacturer, bar one, wants balance of performance to be part of the next evolution of the rule set. I know people think just going to a pure cost cap will be great, but manufacturers want a different solution, so take it up with them.
We got to talk about the BOP, Dre. Love you guys. For me, overall, look, let's put it to you this way. Because of the state of Verstappen's vocal complaints about the rule set, the teasing of a retirement, the teasing of whatever you want to call it, it's amazing because you would never get this much noise about a race engineer changing teams ever. Ever. If Bono in the middle of 20...
If Bonington left for Ferrari with Lewis, yes. But other than that...
But Bono didn't want to move to Italy. Understandably, a lot of Brits don't want to leave Britain. We are bad for moving countries unless it's Spain. We love a Spanish holiday. Oh no, poor influencers. Whatever should we do without them? It's wild that this would not be a big story if it wasn't for the timing of it, especially because it seems GP is quite highly rated by a lot of people, because I remember at the end of last season, there was rumors that he might go to Aston Martin to be a team principal, or Alpine was offering him a team principal-esque kind of role. So I wonder if the rumors are, because there's rumors floating around that Andrea Stella may come home and may join Ferrari in an advanced role in the future. And if this is McLaren maybe preparing Giampiero to be team principal in the future to take what Stella's role is. Or it's just McLaren wants to improve its trackside performance because that's their big weakness. Stella's a technical guy. He's not a strategist. They've already got Courtenay in from Red Bull. Why not bring in the guy that was head of racing and people generally quite respect? Makes a lot of sense, but
four to five. Who knows? All very interesting. Let's crack open the mailbag.
We got a few questions in here as well. I got a really good one from Krista Hardy to start off with. Krista Hardy, yes, that Krista Hardy, IndyCar's Krista Hardy. I think this is a great question. He says, whose racing autobiography would you read that hasn't put one out yet?
Hasn't put one out yet. So nobody that's got an autobiography. So, anybody.
I know my answer right away. Well, I'll wait for you on this one.
Why don't you give me yours first? Because it's been a while since I've read for leisure. RJ Confession.
For me, it's more than obvious, Nico Rosberg. I would, I am I'm super interested in how 2016 played out, because we know drips and drabs that Rosberg has given us since his in his life after F1. He's done a lot. He's done a bunch of media. He's done, obviously, he blew up on YouTube. He's now a part-time TV pundit in his own right. But Rosberg's quite a fascinating career in that he burst onto the scene as a 19-year-old, and then he almost got left behind a little bit by Lewis Hamilton, in that Hamilton came in, almost immediately wins a world championship, and like Nico being the hyped wonder kid just kind of never really happened. It kind of happened quietly for a good few years at Williams before he joined Mercedes, whoops Michael Schumacher's ass for 3 years, and then all of a sudden enters the final boss, where he's now got to take on Lewis Hamilton directly for three championship defining seasons from 14 to 16. And that 2016 season is a fascinating one. When did he, like, and we kind of know when he wanted to retire. I remember it was after he won in Japan. Allegedly, he told his wife Vivian that if I win the world title, that's it. But little things like in Japan, he cut 80 grams of weight so he could save a tenth in the car or something like that. Or, you know, just I'd love to know what was going through his head through 2016, because we talk about Max now and the possibility of an early retirement. Nico Rosberg actually did the damn thing, and it's never even been hinted that he might come back. Like, he has been steadfast on that retirement, and that was at 31. That was truly an early retirement. That was a, you're hanging it up while you're in your prime. Coming off his best year in F1, and he was done. So if it was me, I'd say Nico Rosberg, because I would love to know how those last 3 years at Mercedes played out, especially because I don't know if you saw it the other day, RJ, that Toto said in the media, he fired the pair of them after Barcelona and the crash that they had. The only reason he brought them back was because he couldn't attribute blame for that crash. It's wild.
We're going to fire you, but since we can't really blame anybody, and also this would be commercial and sporting sabotage on our part, we're going to let you keep your wives for the rest of the year. But you're fired, but not really.
You're fired, but please come into work on Wednesday.
Oh, man. Some obvious good ones. Mark Marquez hasn't written one, I don't think. Not that I'm aware of.
No, he hasn't. He's got a great biography out by Matt Oxley that came out late last year, which I do highly recommend picking it up if you haven't already. Mark the Magnificent. I've been told very good things about it, but he hasn't got an autobiography yet, no.
Alonso hasn't. Going off the ball a bit, and this can tie into a future question I saw flash up. Andre Lotter has had an interesting career, hasn't
that
he?
That is an interesting career.
Starting as a Jaguar F1 prospect, doesn't get an opportunity there, does a one-off champ car drive, doesn't get any long-term opportunities in there, makes a career for itself in Japan. That turns into an Audi deal where he has one of the greatest endurance racing careers ever, gets him a one-off F1 drive, comes back to that, does a little bit of FE in between. He's been some places, man.
That would be fascinating. Formula E, you know, what we called Formula Nippon back then, a brief tenure in F1 by comparison, a hearty career in sports cars since then. Yeah, that would be very interesting. That man's driven just about everything you can think of in the modern age. So, yeah, that would be very interesting, actually. Should we link to the Hardy's bonus question now while on the subject? I think that'd be a wise idea. Bonus question, which deceased person's autobiography would you want to read if they would have done one?
Man, I know he is still with us, but due to circumstances, that autobiography is not going to come. I want to know what Michael Schumacher's autobiography would have looked like.
Oh, yeah, man.
One already.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he's more than alive, obviously, but yeah, I think that would have been my pick as well, because I grew up a Michael man. I really did. And like, Michael was my first true love in motorsport, in the sense of he was the first driver that was like, as a child watching him, I was like, that's my guy right there. Because I loved watching him drive that scarlet red Ferrari. But also, again, a fascinating all-round read about his career, because, again, came through from sports cars, was ruthless pretty much from day one when he debuted in 91. You know, was wrapped in controversy, multiple controversies over his career. Adelaide 94, Jerez 97, you know, Monaco 2006. He was loved and he was equally loathed by many. And, you know, we've had drips and drabs of Michael and his career over the years, but to hear it straight from the horse's mouth and look back, as Vic points out in the chat, he was a very private person as well.
This would have been something huge if we'd gotten it.
Yeah, because you're absolutely right in that he was a very private person. He didn't have a very big inner circle. It was a few drivers, his manager Sabine, and not much else. I think it would have been a fascinating read about what his career would have been. A couple of suggestions in the chat as well. Dale Sr. from DeHardy said he would have had Tim Richmond second.
Nicky Lauda flash up as well. I don't know if he got one out there. Dale Sr. is an interesting one because, like, now when we have a driver that dies in the line of duty, dies in a racing accident, like a Dale Earnhardt and their setup, we know so much about them that we can almost be just like, we get so much about their lives and what they were really like after they're gone that we just kind of lose sight of the fact. But there's also this angle that we cover in an autobiography that we don't get that firsthand account.
Yeah.
Dan Weldon, another from Edwin.
Yeah, Dan Weldon would have been very interested. Vic says James Hunt, taken from us far too soon, didn't even make 50. James Hunt, which is just, another genuinely, I know people have him down as like the smoking fornicator, but there was a lot to James Hunt's personality.
Deeply misunderstood.
Very misunderstood character in the context of Formula One and motorsports at large. I think that would be a fascinating read in its own right. Ed explains, just for one Weldon, just for being the one of him, Jensen and Anthony, that didn't make F1. Which is a very true point. Anthony Davidson could drive a car as well, certainly. Let's have a look back at the list. It's a big list. Not really. it's a Wednesday night. What can you do? Raptor asked you, I believe it was Toki that asked earlier, what to expect out of Genesis in their first year, I believe, in WEC next year. They unveiled the cars today, actually, I think, didn't they?
Yeah, they unveiled them recently. The GMR 001 has been testing for the last couple of months in preparation for their debut, which is this weekend at Imola, because that's when the WEC season starts. Remember, it was supposed to start in February in Qatar, and for obvious reasons, that didn't happen. It was actually March. Either way, same principle. We're starting the season in Imola. By the way, interesting dichotomy of a doubleheader WEC IMSA at Imola and Long Beach. Which one of them is going to have more passing per dollar?
Good question.
Anyway, that's not what Toki asked. What is Genesis going to do this year? Simple answer. I think to start 2026... And it's the same with any upstart program. If you weren't in on the ground floor, the first half of 2026 is going to be a learn year for them. They were doing laps. They weren't necessarily pushing the car. They didn't necessarily have all the pace in the prologue, but that's ultimately not what the prologue is about. That's not to flex your race pace for Imola. That's what the rest of the weekend is for. The thing is to get laps on the board. They've got plenty of experienced hands in endurance racing. They're just some of the names that they brought into the program. The aforementioned Andre Lotterer, Pipo Durrani is there, Danny Yokodea is there, Matthew Jaminet is there, from Porsche, Paul-Loup Chatan, formerly of Alpine, is there. Mathis Jaubert is the only greenhorn, but he's very, very talented. So with the combination of a lot of those more experienced guys, they certainly have like data they could pull from a lot of places. in terms of how to get more pace out of the car. I wouldn't expect them to go out and win Imola straight up. It'd be great, but I'm not expecting it because we know Ferrari and Toyota are far more well-drilled, and you can put Cadillac up there in that bracket as well in a little bit of that Porsche. I wouldn't say they will be struggling to keep their head above water either, is the thing.
Yeah. Like, I don't think lack of talent would be the issue here, was what I would say. Like, there's plenty of it out there for them to take advantage of in that sense. So, yeah, very fascinating stuff indeed. A hypothetical in regards to the McLaren discussion we had earlier. If they do go off the Max, which of Lando or Oscar gets to chop?
Oscar. It's Oscar, but he's not getting the chop. He's going to leave of his own volition, and if not, his manager is going to advocate that he leaves of his own volition.
The manager that Oscar politely said, please don't come to my races next year.
Okay. I missed that little detail. But, like, it's just got the feeling of, like, it's two number one drivers, at least in theory, but that arrangement can't last. Lando's too good. Oscar's too good. And we know that Lando has been there a bit longer, and I think I'm not going to be like all the craziest Oscar Piastri fans to say that he has no chance of winning McLaren, but I think naturally he's going to start shopping around for option, thinking, where can I have a competitive ride where I have more of a leading role in a team?
It's an interesting one because given there was always going to be the possibility that McLaren might only win in that window of the ground effect era that's now been and gone in Formula One. And now Mercedes were never going to tolerate being beaten by a customer for very long. Oscar might have blown his one chance of winning a world title. You know, I mean, you never know how the F1 shakes out, and you never know how movement can come around and happen. But
another lost Australian talent falling short of a world title, dog.
And Piastri might... And I say this with no chill. Piastri might be the most gifted Australian that's ever stepped foot in an F1 car on raw talent. He's insanely good when he wants to be. And I love me some Daniel Ricciardo. And you know,
we're going to get some emails from some Jack Brabham old heads. But we didn't get to see him. But we did see Ricciardo. We did see Weber, and we are seeing Piastri.
Of that modern age, Brabham might be the one exception, but Brabham did build his own car. So, you know, that's a little bit of a, well, how do you evaluate that in the context of the man? It's a bit, I call it the John Surtees argument. It's like, how do you evaluate a guy that was also great on two wheels? It's hard on that one. But what I will say is that Piastri's ridiculously talented. He screams Red Bull to me if Max were to walk away, because I didn't even realize this until doing research for the latest video I did. Christian Horner looked at Piastri as the one who got away for the Red Bull Academy. I did not realize Horner wanted him as a Red Bull driver and never got the chance.
Now that the Verstappen and McLaren rumors are starting to spiral up, what's been the one thing that Red Bull has been suggested to do to potentially replace Max Verstappen? Go get the guy away and bring him back.
Yeah, go get a big name or go get Carlos Sainz in. Now they don't have to worry about the Verstappen politics of it if he doesn't walk away, which would be interesting. I know Mark Webber would never let that fly for obvious self-inflicted reasons, but yeah, you know, we'll have to wait and see on that one. Let's go for Ed's question here next. This is a more fun one, and I'm wearing a New Day shirt. It's only fitting that I'm bringing this up. It is WrestleMania this weekend, after all.
WrestleMania weekend, and confidence in the product has never been better.
It's never been lower, I think the phrase you're looking for here. You know, 25% off tickets through yesterday, and Pat McAfee dunking on his own
the
product.
The main event angle is telling you that we're shit and you shouldn't watch us is crazy, but that's ultimately not the question that we're asking.
The question that Ed's asking is, pick a driver or rider from MotoGP, F1, IndyCar, and SportsCars to do a WrestleMania-style event. Who are you picking and who is winning?
Okay, what are the ground rules here? So I there were four sectors of racing named. So you can chime in if you're wrong. Are we suggesting tag team match, or are we suggesting fatal four way match?
I think fatal four way is more interesting.
Mm-hmm. So what are the criteria? What are we looking for? Were you looking for dudes that you think could actually like put on an entertaining match, give a good promo, etc.?
Ooh, if I wanted a decent promo guy who could probably get in the ring and initiate fisticuffs if need be, give me George Russell. I think he's a great chicken shit heel. Because that's basically what he is in Formula One right now. He gives off big Randall Weems energy from Recess, where it's like he's the snitch, no one likes him. But you know what it is? It's not that no one likes him. It's that George understands he's a heel, and he plays mm-hmm. up to it. And I think that's what makes him quite interesting. He understands his role. I feel George would be a great pro wrestler. I really do.
Yeah.
So if I had to pick a guy from F1.
If you had to pick a guy from F1, it's George. I mean, you certainly sold me on the high points here. I mean, you couldn't be worse of a British representative in pro wrestling than Rob Terry or any one of the other number of scandalized British indie wrestlers from the decade past.
Is anyone? No.
From MotoGP, because they're all short, right?
I've got one.
Who you got?
Pedro Acosta.
Sell me on Pedro Acosta. What makes Pedro Acosta a main event player in hypothetical racing WrestleMania?
Pedro Acosta will put butts in seats. He is box office. He's a great quote. He has no problem making sex jokes, swearing, cursing. But fundamentally, I've said this for some time, he's always been the guy who's understood from the time he was in Moto3, Rossi's not going to be here much longer. We've got a sport to sell. And I've always rated Pedro Acosta for being the person that quote-unquote gets it. Gets that marketing side of motorsport, gets that being a personality and being a character is important in selling a sport. So I think he would cut some great promos. I think he'd probably have a Lita-style live sex celebration in the middle of the ring if he won a major championship. It would pop a great rating. And I think he would be a great heel in the ring. I would love, of all the guys in MotoGP, Pedro Acosta would absolutely love pro wrestling. That's my sell.
IndyCar has got some contenders. You know, when you want size, you got multiple guys who are over 6 feet tall and weigh more than 180 pounds. They kind of have to because, like, that's a non-power steering vehicle. There's some obvious candidates that come to mind. I mean, when it comes to promos, Pat O'Ward is like, he self-styles himself as the voice of the voiceless in IndyCar, which is, well, we know that. Graham Rahal could certainly be like an old Randy Orton type because he's big, right? He can always lean on the nepotism angle, etc. I know Will Power gets on tirades and stuff, but he also just seems like he's too laid back, right?
He like Will Power gives big John Moxley energy.
Mm-hmm.
That could be quite interesting. And to be fair, we kind of need a. I'm kind of thinking Scott Dixon only because we need a babyface somewhere. We need someone for the fans to root for. And you know, so do you want? You don't want three heels in here. We've picked Acosta and Russell already.
Well, Acosta could be a babyface. We could book Acosta as a babyface. It's fine.
Sure. Okay, fine. So if you open up the doors for a heel, I think Vic's suggestion of Santino Ferrucci probably
I'm
would
not
be
going
low.
With Ms. Tino Ms. Rucci. Come on now. No.
Max like, or Jacob Ferrucci.
I've got. Ooh, that's going to be. Alternatively, you could just tell Joseph Newgarden. I'm going to give you a here is a long library of Cody Rhodes tapes from recent years.
Oh,
just
God, it really,
that.
It is New God. It's just Joseph New Garden, isn't it? It really.
What do you want to talk about?
He, like, the thing is, right, he looks like Cody Rhodes. He talks like Cody Rhodes. He's a theater kid, a bit like Cody Rhodes, right? Yeah. He's got the classic clean-cut babyface look that would promote a series as a babyface. Right. Or he could basically be Homelander. You could take your pick either way on this one. It's Joseph. It just never clocked to me on this one. It's Joseph Newgarden. Absolutely, it's Newgarden.
There you go. There you go. And, you know... You know, there could still some be some people that are just like, I don't know about this guy. So you get the mixed reaction that you get from every top baby face. It's perfect. Yeah. Oh, God. That leads me to sports cards. And that is a long, long list of people of notoriety, both big and small. There's some good people. There are also some real, genuine criminals.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. My first thought was people want to see somebody get beat up. You wouldn't. Who wouldn't want to give Pipo the Rani a chair shot to the back?
I don't know. Like having interact, have talk with Pipo and stuff. I just don't think it sounds like his thing.
No. So one of the tailors.
Like, okay. One of the I mean,
Ricky sounds like he'd be down for this sort of thing. Or Jordan, actually. I think Jordan actually would be the better tenor brother for this. He'd love this.
Yeah, he could just play Rodney Sandstorm. Like, that would be great. I know this is probably a pop-out answer. There's probably some, like, amateur or semi-pro drivers. I mean, Kenny Bull was hanging out with Brock Lesnar before the IMSA race in Indianapolis recently because WrestleMania was also in town that weekend.
It's just too on the mark, isn't it? It's just. I would like to go
Jordan. Kenny Bull or like a Ben Keating who could basically just like, I don't know, be this rough and tough Texan who's like actually very, very tiny and probably doesn't look like he can beat you up. I mean, there's many choices.
So we've got a fatal four-way here.
Wisdom brings up a good point. American veteran Spencer Pompelli in the ring because did you hear he killed a guy? This is actually an inside bit from another podcast. I know Spencer is a upstanding man, but it's a dinner with racers bit. Also, hi, Ryan, if you're listening to this, let's catch up.
Yeah, that would be neat. I mean, so you're telling me we've got George Russell, Pedro Acosta, Joseph Newgarden, and Jordan Taylor as our fatal four-way. I'm going to call an audible here. Throw a NASCAR guy in there as well.
Oh, yeah, because we got to have celebrity involvement in this because it is WrestleMania season. Cletus McFarlane.
Well, you're not wrong.
Lightly told to just chill in trucks for a bit as you gain experience, Cletus McFarlane.
Jason says Joey Logano if you need a heel. No, you know, give me the actual wrestler who could also be a commentator. Sorry, give me Kevin Harvick.
Yeah.
Kevin Harvick was a legitimate collegiate wrestler. He was a very good one, from what I've been told.
Kyle Busch has a 24/7 championship, and plus you got to have him do something that's not driving that Richard Childress shitbox.
And NASCAR guys love a bit of wrestling. We've had them. We've had Cole Custer on NXT before. Uh-huh. You know, like
Joey
we've
Logano,
had Joey Logano.
Carl Edwards were on there.
Everybody likes Carl Edwards.
Bob Hardy had a NASCAR gimmick going into the sport before he was just a pissed off old man.
Yeah. So that would be a fun fatal five-way. Please let us know other suggestions on the social media somewhere if you want so. Because after all, someone's got to wrestle famous NASCAR driver Joe Hendry. Anyway. One question about the big three you cover from Jason. F1, IndyCar, MotoGP. Who's the next first-time winner?
It's interesting, right? Do we want to just pick one?
Oh, we can go one each. We got time.
One each. Leads us to IndyCar. And David Malouka seems like the easiest layup ever.
I think that's inevitable, surely. He's too good not to. Uh-huh. He's been really solid for Penske so far.
Yeah. So do we want to have an expert difficulty challenge where we can't pick a driver that just got to Penske?
Well, To be fair, I was going to say, regardless, the guy that I said in the season preview was a hot take would win a race this season. I would say Marcus Armstrong. I think Marcus is very underrated in IndyCar. I don't think he gets enough flowers in that series. He's a top 10, really solid all-around guy, especially on road and street courses. He's looked particularly good the last year or so of MSR. So if it was me, I'd say next first time winner in IndyCar, give me Marcus Armstrong.
Yeah, that seems most likely, unless Mick Schumacher absolutely balls the hell out at the road course at Indy next month.
The problem is that it's quite a drop in quality after that for people that haven't won a race, because then you realize Christian Lingard's won a race, Rinus VK's won a race, Felix Rosenquist has won a race.
Yeah. Yes. Graham Rahal's won several. Again, Graham Rahal's won
several. Would it be crazy to suggest Santino Ferrucci at this point if it was an oval one day?
It wouldn't be crazy. Remember, the streak is still
living. He is a good oval driver.
Yeah. The streak is still intact, regardless of what you or I or anybody else have to say about it. Romain Grosjean looks good at Dale Coyne, but I feel like that window to win a race has already come and shut. Maybe it's Dennis Hauger.
I've seen crazier suggestions. I'm not really saying it's good Dennis Hauger
at Coyne. I'm not saying it'd be a Coyne, but like I'm saying within the next couple of years, maybe it's Dennis Hauger.
Maybe so. Could be something. The Hardy in the chat says.
Reminder. Carlos Fuentes is an IndyCar winner. That's one of the craziest things ever, is that guys like Raul Boisel, Vitor Mira, Romain Grosjean went their entire IndyCar careers, which span multiple seasons, to good teams where they had opportunities to win multiple races, didn't win a race. Carlos Huertas, one of the most polar bear in Arlington, Texas winners of all time. And so I don't think the car was fully legal because they got pinged for technical infringement afterwards.
Yeah, for MotoGP, do we just say Pedro Acosta and move on here? Because it's startling he hasn't won a race yet.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Malukas thing, though. Do we want to try and go off the board?
I think we probably should, in all fairness, really, shouldn't we? And if that's the case, again, you got to look at the names, because Frankie Morbidelli's won a race. Fabio DiGiantonio's won a race. Alex Marquez has now won multiple races. Fermin Aldeguer's won a race.
If it's anybody on the grid, it looks like it's Ayagura. If it's anybody not on the grid, though, because remember,
Ralph Fernandez has a race win now. Like, is it Ayagura? Like, has his run? His run at the top has been so short. It's like it feels almost dirty picking him, which it shouldn't. It's kind of weird in that sense. But then you realize this Grand Prix grid's got 17 race winners on it. Mm-hmm. You're probably right. It probably is Ayagura out of the entire list. Maybe Diogo Moreira one day. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe David Alonso. If Honda get good again. Who knows? I mean, there's some names you could throw out here, but like three quarters of MotoGP has won a race. We've got, I think it's 18 race winners on the grid right now, which is crazy.
And then that leads to inevitably Formula One, right? Where we know that the competitive equity is not the same as it is in IndyCar or MotoGP, even. Well, Kimi Antonelli got his off the board, so that's a big one. And then it's a steep drop to the rest of the field in 2026.
Because I think on raw talent, I agree with a couple of guys in the chat, it's probably Oddie Bearman. But the problem is, how does he get into a car that's now good enough? Because it looks like Hamilton might actually stick around a bit longer. Like, yeah, that's Bearman going to wait around, waiting for a seat to open up at Ferrari, given Leclerc's only 28, and Hamilton looks better this year than he did last year, but how long does Hamilton want to go? We just don't know.
Do we want to pump the Hulkenberg podium? We got Hulken podium. Who says Hulken win isn't off the table?
I want to so bad, but I've got a feeling that Isaac Hadjer will probably... There's a much better chance it's Hadjer long-term.
Yeah.
Given these are already.
Yeah. It's either going to be Hadjer or it's going to be someone like, I don't know, Arvid Lindblad, depending on what happens at Red Bull in the short and long-term future.
He's green, but he's quick.
If you ask this at the start of this year, we know what the number one answer is, and then we're having to scramble to go off the board.
Yes.
The problem is Kimi Antonelli is now leading the championship.
Yeah. It's not really fair, that, is it?
Trophy for Hulk and win.
I mean, speaking of which, last question on the board, unless somebody gets one in quick in the chat in the next 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, we got a maximum 15 minutes of stoppage time here. So if you've got questions, and if you haven't sent us a question in, please let us know. We still got some time.
Indeed. I set a hard limit of 90 minutes for the whole show, so we got about another 15 minutes. So get them in quick if you can already. This is from Raptor. It says, I don't know if it was Raptor or it was Jason. Forgive me if I got it wrong. How long until Pedro Acosta finally wins a race? Or better phrased, what's the most likely place on the calendar for Acosta to win?
So an extension of the previous question. We know Acosta's a KTM. It's a bit of a weird situation, but he's going to Ducati soon.
I mean, can he win on a KTM? I mean, it's weird because the places he was really strong last year was Brno, which Marquez would go on to win by a nose or so. Maybe Portimao. He was very strong over there at the end of last season. The problem is that KTM is so inconsistent as a manufacturer. You just don't know when they're going to be great. And that's what makes it really hard to predict. If he joins the factory Ducati team, he's going to win very quickly. Mark will tuck the front somewhere. He always has when it comes to the old race here and there. So I don't think you'd have to wait long for an Acosta victory. And to be fair, he's pretty good everywhere now. Guessing KTM tracks is really hard. If I had to pick one, I would say maybe Brno, depending on how long it stays on the calendar. Maybe Portimao. And as Raptor alluded to as well, you probably... Maybe Assen. I think they could go... Assen tends to be quite equalizing. Maybe Assen. I'd throw that one in the mix as well, if it were me.
Yeah. You know, that's a fit. If you're going to win your first race at the top class, you might as well make it a big one. What's bigger than the Dutch TT?
Yeah.
Besides the World Championship, of course.
Yeah. It's not a bad shout. I wrapped to mention as well, that was Anaya was on track for a podium in Brno last year until he crashed and hit Taka Nakagami. It's a good point. That was where Anaya was strong. That was probably KTM's best round last year on paper. So I'd say Brno if I had to guess. But yeah, not an easy one to guess because you just don't know what KTM is at this point. One from Dahari as well.
Making us think deep.
Quite morbid, but it's for good reason. Which driver not having their fatal accident do you think would have the biggest butterfly effect on racing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that can, of course, extend to riders. I mean,
cool.
there's some obvious ones here because NASCAR, it had some pretty, pretty rough outcomes. Up until February 18, 2001 was the moment where the sport had realized, we got a problem because we just lost Dale Earnhardt, and this is not the first time this sort of thing has been happening. Obviously also the obvious ones with what happens if Senna doesn't have his crash? Where does he go? How do we think of him now? What happens in Formula One for the rest of people?
I think Ayrton almost certainly ends up in a Ferrari at some point in his career. If anything, you know, if you saw this, John Todt was on Jake Humphrey's High Performance podcast yesterday, and in it he mentioned Senna wanted to join Ferrari in 94, but never did because Ferrari had both its drivers already signed for that year in Gerhard Berger and John Alesi, and Todt didn't want to break the contract of one of his drivers to bring Ayrton Senna, and he was a man of honor, basically. But he would have had Senna in 95.
Greg Moore and Gonzalo Rodriguez is one of the interesting butterfly effects because Greg Moore, before his accident, had a contract in hand, had a car painted up. He was going to Penske. The car, they had a show car painted up with his number 99. You want to know why Cart retired number 99 and why no IndyCar driver has really used it in the last decade and a half or so? It's for Greg. Because that was his number. And if he goes on to Penske, what happens with him in the next decade of American open wheel racing when Penske defects? What the hell happens to Elio Castroneves? Because he was the first beneficiary of what happened. And then also throw in Gonzalo Rodriguez. He was supposed to get the seat that went to Roberto Moreno, and Roberto Moreno's best season was arguably in the year 2000 when he got the ride that should have been Gonzalo Rodriguez's.
It's a very good shout. I mean, you know your American Open Wheel better than I do, so I'd leave the hands to you on that one, but that makes a lot of sense. Jules Bianchi's come up a couple of times, and I was going to... Jules was the first thing that entered my head as well, because everything and their mother suggested that Jules was going to end up as a Ferrari driver one day. Mm-hmm. He was already on the brink of going to Sauber the year before he passed away in 2016, I think he passed away, but it was 2014 when he had his, had his fatal accident, or eventually fatal accident. But he had a Sauber deal ready to go. So he was already going to be in a similar spot to where Charles Leclerc was going to be a couple of years later when he started his F1 career at Sauber and eventually end up at Ferrari. That would have been a fascinating, well, what happens to Kimi Raikkonen? What happens to Sebastian Vettel and his influence at Ferrari? What happens to Charles Leclerc? Because, like, does Charles get the Ferrari opportunity down the road eventually, or does he have to wait at Sauber for a little bit longer? Don't know. And not to mention, his passing away has had a huge influence on the safety of Formula One, because if it wasn't for him, we probably never get the halo. And the halo that I think at this point is more than fair to say has saved countless lives in open wheel motorsports for its very inclusion.
Henry Surtees would still be here with us if he still had a halo on his MSV Formula 2 car brand's hatch.
Absolutely. Henry Surtees is still
Wilson
here.
Justin Wilson would be here if we had an aero screen that day in Pocono.
Yeah, indeed. No doubt about it. I remember Alonso and Raikkonen had a horrible one in Austria where, again, helmets are affected. What happens to Lewis Hamilton at Monza 2021 if a tire strikes him clean in the head? I don't know. It's impossible to say. I think it was Charles Leclerc himself who had a very big near miss at Spa that time, as well, with the halos that we had. Big chunk. Grosjean being helped out of his car in Bahrain as well, being able to escape the flames. There's a bunch that we could go to. Modern day safety is not what it is in motorsport if it wasn't for the passing of Jules. That's a great shout. Vic in the chat as well. Marco Simoncelli almost certainly would have been a Repsol Honda rider one day. They rated him. Marco was universally seen as a future world champion before he passed away. Louis Salom was arguably the best of that three-man group that had that famous Moto3 world title battle between him. And yes, I'm talking about Alex Rins, who was in that title fight that year, and Maverick Vinales, two stud talents who would go on to be MotoGP premier class race winners. Yeah. Maverick Vinales is a double-digit race winner in MotoGP. There's only 24 of them. And Salom was every bit as talented as they were before Salom passed away.
And the other one that really, Daijiro Kato. Japan's had a premier class world champion. If Kato finishes out the year at Gresini, how does the rest of his career look? How does the rest of Sete Jimmerdow's career look? Are we looking at a future where Valentino Rossi's chief rival, until the likes of Stoner, Lorenzo, and Pedrosa show up, is Daijiro Kato?
It's an interesting question. Yeah, the overall influence, because Japanese top flight motorcycle talent has it's been stop-starty ever since. You know, we've we had Makoto Tomato win a couple of races. Hiroshi Ayama never got a real opportunity in the top flight where he could challenge for wins. And, like, Ayagura, you know, his career is still very young, relatively speaking. We don't know what he's ultimately going to be. But Kato, how would that have influenced Gibbonau? Marco Melandri, who had ended up being a factory-level Honda rider in his own right at one point as well. Melandri was a very talented rider. Too, how would it have affected his career? Who knows? Yeah, there's some interesting questions there, certainly.
Then going back, you've got choices like Francois Soubirous, who would also fit the criteria of if they had lived long enough to have a biography, that I think would have been an interesting read. You know, the guy who was being set up to be the successor to Jackie Stewart at Tyrrell. What happens to Tyrrell for the rest of the 70s? How does the rest of the sport in the 70s and 80s look like?
Good questions. Interesting.
Of course, depressingly, as long as you kind of think, sometimes these things happen for a reason. It's just really sad when it does.
Yeah, right to mention the last point as well. Stewart's safety campaign, that would have been effective because Stewart was the biggest advocate we've probably ever had in motorsport for safety as a driver. When a lot of people didn't take him seriously back then. And that man had to bury many of his friends, Francois' best friend. Yeah, there's a lot to say the least. Great questions. Thank you to everybody in the chat for sending them in. Much appreciated. We'll be back next week to review IndyCar's Grand Prix at Long Beach. We'll probably talk a little IMSA in there as well, because why not?
Be that long. It's 100 minutes of racing, and who knows how it's going to go. But we'll be back next week to talk about how it all goes down.
So we'll talk about Carl Kirkwood's inevitable win at Long Beach because it's a street race and Andretti are busted on them. So we'll probably talk about a Kirkwood victory. So we'll see what happens there in IndyCar at Long Beach. We'll be back racing properly next week because we've got IndyCar. Then we've got MotoGP the week after that for the Spanish Grand Prix. And then Formula One's back in Miami. So we're back to something like normal next week.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see. Thank you very much for your patience in the downtime. Much appreciated. Hope you guys enjoyed the show tonight. Thank you very much for watching and listening along. We'll see you next week. Take care. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Done any cool searches at AF3 lately, Dodger?
Brother, don't even start. Ha, 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 ha.